I want to ask you to open up your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, as you're turning there, let me just say a word of thanks to Melanie for the time that she took to put all of the bread in those cups. I know that's a time-consuming thing, but thank you for doing that. It's much appreciated. My guess is that you have probably worked at a company now or in the past that had some kind of mission statement. That is a very common thing in our culture, for companies to have mission statements. Amazon's mission statement, for example, is to be the Earth's most customer-centric company, where customers can find and discover anything they might want to buy online except toilet paper, and endeavor to offer its customers the lowest possible prices. Google, to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. AT&T, to see how long they can keep you on hold. Those are lighthearted there. But I never stopped to think about what would the Christians' mission statement be, if we could have one. And I think what DJ read for us this morning in 1 Peter chapter 2 is a great summation of what our mission statement would be as Christians. In verse 21, Peter says, "For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in His steps." So Peter is writing to those who are suffering for their faith, but the principle remains true for every aspect of our lives. Our mission statement is one of imitation, where we're trying to follow in Jesus' footsteps. We're trying to imitate His example, to become more like Him every single day. As Paul would say in Romans 8, be conformed to the image of Jesus. And so I want to spend some time thinking about that with you this morning. What it means to follow in Jesus' footsteps. And that's a broad category. That's a broad thing to think about. So I want to hone in on one specific example, an aspect of Jesus' character, by asking this question. What was Jesus passionate about? You ever thought about that question? What was Jesus passionate about? What caught His attention while He was on earth? What kinds of things was He interested in and devoted to while He lived on earth? What was He zealous about and passionate about and excited about? I don't know if I've ever asked that question. But if our mission as Christians is one of imitation, then our effort should be passionate about the things that He was passionate about. And so we ask that question, what was He passionate about? There are a couple of things I want to share with you this morning, and then the lesson will be yours. I think first thing Jesus was passionate about was caring for those in physical distress. Jesus was passionate about those who were suffering, who were in pain, who were going through difficult and tumultuous times in life. Jesus' heart broke over those people who were hurting and suffering and in pain. Does that surprise you? Maybe not surprise is not the best word. Does that strike you? That the Son of God, who had every right to focus on His own needs and focus on Himself, would be concerned about the plight of mankind's suffering. That is hard for me to wrap my mind around, that Jesus, the Son of God, God in the flesh, would be so concerned about you and me that our suffering would impact Him. And it certainly did in a number of ways. I want you to go to Matthew chapter 13 if you're not already there with me. And while there are a lot of examples we could look at about Jesus' care for those in physical distress, for me, Matthew chapter 14 is it. Here in Matthew chapter 14, actually backing up to chapter 13, Jesus was rejected at His hometown in Nazareth. And in chapter 14 in verse 1, Herod is hearing all these things about Jesus. And his conscience begins to bother him. He's thinking that Jesus is John the Baptist. And Matthew records this story of what Herod did to John the Baptist by executing him with his wife Herodias. And that's what she wanted. But in verse 13, we find this. As Jesus hears about John the Baptist's death, look at the beginning of verse 13. Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. Let's stop right there. I want you to think about this for a moment. Jesus has just heard about John. And so what he does is go off to be by himself. Maybe for a couple of reasons. Maybe he's worried that Herod's going to try to do the same thing to him and it's not his time. But even more so, I think Jesus is getting by himself because he wants to grieve John's death. I think that may be a plausible answer here, that John has been the forerunner. John has been the one to usher in, and now John is dead, and Jesus just wants some alone time to be by himself. We understand that, right? When someone dies that we care about, we just want to be by ourselves. Verse 13, as Jesus goes to a secluded place, when the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. When he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. So think about that. All Jesus wants to do is be by himself. But there's this large crowd that comes after him, and they bring all of these people to Jesus to be healed of their sicknesses. And Jesus could have said, no, I need some time alone. But he feels compassion for them, and he heals their sick. Jesus put his own needs aside and felt compassion for people who came to him because he knew they needed help. He was passionate about caring for those in physical distress. You know, on a side note, in verse 15, look at how verse 15 begins. It says, when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, this place is desolate and the hour is already late, so send the crowds away that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves. Maybe an implication here is that this took all day, all the way until evening. And yet that tells us of Jesus' compassion, his care for those in this crowd to heal them. That's not the only time we find Jesus moved with compassion to help other people. There are all sorts of examples of Jesus touching a leper, of Jesus talking to the blind and befriending the lame and handling the diseased and comforting the grieving. But his attitude towards those in physical distress was so much different than everybody else. Think about how often people looked at those with difficult and distressed physical problems as people to avoid and not talk to. Yet that wasn't Jesus' attitude at all. One writer said it this way, the physically disabled and diseased were not disruptions to Jesus' schedule or misfits to be avoided, but they were objects of his passionate concern. And I find that so compelling, don't you? I find it so challenging that Jesus was aware of things he could do to show compassion to those who were in difficult situations. So what about us? Is that our attitude? Are we compassionate to those who are going through suffering and they're grieving and they're having difficult times in life? We may not be able to heal people like Jesus healed people, but we can show compassion like he showed compassion. We can do that in a number of ways. Obviously, we're in a different kind of situation right now in our world. But when opportunities to arise to visit those who are in the hospital, call up members who are struggling with their health, who are suffering, who are going through times of grief and distress, writing cards and offering prayers. But our mission is one of imitation, where we recalibrate our actions to be passionate about caring for those who are physically distressed. But that's not it. Jesus was passionate about that. He was also passionate about rescuing the lost. And that's so true of Jesus' life. Everywhere that he went, he was passionate about rescuing those who were lost. Would you go to Mark chapter 6 for just a moment? Go to Mark chapter 6. Here Jesus, this is Mark's account of the feeding of the 5,000. And what I find here so compelling is that Jesus was interested about souls who were lost. Mark chapter 6, start reading in verse 30. Mark 6, verse 30. So the apostles gathered together with Jesus and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest for a while, for there were many people coming and going and they did not even have time to eat. They went away in the boat to a secluded place by themselves, and the people saw them going, and many recognized them and ran there together on foot from all the cities and got there ahead of them. When Jesus went ashore, he saw a large crowd, and he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things." So here is another example where Jesus tries to be alone with his disciples, and yet this large crowd comes, and Jesus sees them as sheep without a shepherd. He sees them as people who are lost and need guidance and direction on the right path. Matthew's account tells us that they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. And Jesus became that shepherd for them to lead them and guide them and teach them. Did you notice that in verse 34? They were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. I often wonder what those many things were. Many things about the kingdom of God. Many things about who he was and what he came to do. Jesus cared about those who were eternally lost. As I began to think about that, I began to think about those who are lost in kind of two categories. Those who may be spiritually seeking, i.e., example, those who have an interest in spiritual things. And then the spiritually wandering, for example, those who really have no interest in the gospel, who may not be very inclined to hear about the message of the truth. But I want you to see Jesus cared about both those groups. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's first of all think about the spiritually seeking. You know what's fascinating is Jesus was willing to talk to anyone about who he was. It didn't matter their race, their economic status, anything like that. For example, in Luke chapter 15... you don't have to turn there, but I'll read this for you. Luke chapter 15, a familiar passage to us. Jesus is teaching. And we're told in verse 1 that tax collectors and sinners were coming near to him to listen to him. So sinners who were irreligious Jews and tax collectors, the most despised people of Jesus' day, were spiritually seeking. They came to Jesus to hear about who he was, and Jesus was teaching them. In verse 2, we find that the Pharisees and scribes don't like that. They begin to grumble, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." How could you spend time with people like that? Tax collectors and sinners, why would you spend time with them? What Jesus does in the rest of that chapter is illustrate the joy that goes on in heaven when one sinner repents. To show the joy that God has when those who are spiritually seeking obey the truth. And there are so many other examples of John chapter 4 and Jesus and the Samaritan woman. Here it shows us Jesus' passion to reach those who are seeking to know the truth. But equally as important is Jesus' passion to help those who are spiritually wandering. One writer said it this way. It's really stuck with me this week. It is exciting to talk to someone who wants to learn the truth and worship God. And yet it is a bit messier to care about the person who has grown spiritually weak, rebellious, or immature. And yet Jesus' heart broke over believers who departed. That is a compelling thing. That Jesus would care not only about those who had an interest in the truth, but even those who had rejected Him and wanted nothing to do with Him. Jesus' heart broke still over their situation in life, and He did everything He could to reach them. And so Jesus wept over the city of Jerusalem. People who He came to save, who had rejected Him, Jesus wept over them. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I wanted to gather you as a hen gathers his chick, her chicks. Jesus loved a rich young ruler who went away sorrowful from Him. He described Himself in Luke 15 verses 3 through 7 as the good shepherd who will traverse the wilderness to find that one lost sheep who had strayed from the path. So are we passionate about caring for those who were lost like Jesus was? Not only those who are spiritually seeking, but those who may have turned away from the Lord altogether. Maybe that's the hardest thing, isn't it? Because it's tempting in those moments to think, well, that person has made their decision. They've gone down that path. There's no way they're going to turn back to the right path. But that wasn't the way Jesus thought. Jesus saw souls who were souls and did everything that He could to rescue them. James would tell us in James 5, verses 19 and 20, "My brethren, if any among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins." So Jesus was passionate about those who were lost. And finally, number three, Jesus was passionate about accomplishing the Father's will. If you look over at Matthew chapter 26 with me in our last passage. Matthew chapter 26. I want you to see that Jesus was passionate about and excited about and focused upon doing the Father's will. Remember in Luke, we don't have to turn there, but Luke chapter 2, when Jesus was supposed to be with His parents in the caravan, He was back in Jerusalem in the temple speaking to the elders and the scribes, and His parents come back to Him and say, "Where have you been?" What was Jesus' answer? "I had to be about my Father's business." In Luke, John chapter 4 and verse 34, Jesus would say, "My food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to accomplish His work." But I would suggest to you this morning that most clearly we see Jesus' passion to do the Father's will at the end of His life. In the Garden of Gethsemane, in the final hours of Jesus' life, Jesus still had such a passion and desire to do the Father's will. Matthew chapter 26. Start reading in verse 36. A little bit longer of a read, but hang in there with me. And Jesus came with them, His disciples, to the place called Gethsemane and said to His disciples, "Sit here while I go over there to pray." And He took with Him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. Note that. Then He said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with Me." And He went a little beyond them and fell on His face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from Me. Yet not as I will, but as You will." And He came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "So you men could not keep watch with Me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done. And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. He left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. And then he came to the disciples and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. You know, that's a familiar text to us. But did you notice Jesus' passionate desire to do the Father's will? The fact that he came to the Garden of Gethsemane with his disciples, he was deeply grieved and troubled and distressed. Luke's account tells us in Luke 22 and verse 44 that as Jesus prayed earnestly, his sweat became like drops of blood falling to the ground. I want you to think about that. As we think about the sweat and the tears and the blood that Jesus displayed in the Garden of Gethsemane and on the cross, don't just think about the pain that he experienced. Think about his passion to do the Father's will and how that came out in all of those different ways. Jesus was deeply passionate about the Father's will. What about you this morning? What about me? How passionate am I to do the Father's will? And that's a pretty sobering question to think about. Because we live in a culture that is all about me, myself, and I. If something's not going to benefit me, then why do it at all? And so in a culture that is bent on doing things its own way, our plea is to do the Father's will. Jesus was at a moment in his life at this time that he knew without a doubt the Father's will meant that he was going to give his life as a ransom for our sin. And those three times he prayed, Father, if this cup can pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. Your will be done. That's all I want to do. It was an attitude of humility. It was an attitude of submission. And I would also suggest that that was an attitude of trust. The fact that Jesus could come to the garden and pray that prayer was that he trusted God's will. He knew that whatever God's will, the Father's will was, he knew that God knew what was best. And as we pray that same prayer, we can know the same thing, that as we seek to do the Father's will, He knows what's best for us. But let's just be passionate and zealous to do the Father's will in our lives as we go about the rest of this week. As we wrap up this morning, I want to offer one final thought, just as maybe a fourth point, if you will. I will tell you that above everything else that Jesus was passionate about, above everything else, I would say to you this morning that Jesus was passionate about saving you from your sin. And that is hard for me to wrap my mind around. That Jesus would care so deeply about your soul and my soul, that he would passionately give his life on the cross to save us from our sin. He would leave the glory of heaven and come to the earth for your sin and mine. To give us his life on the cross so we can have a new life, a second chance, a new beginning in a relationship with the Father. So as we think about Jesus' passionate desire to save us from our sin, I just ask you this morning, do you want that in your own life? Do you see your need for what Jesus did for you? Do you see your need for a relationship with God? Because that's the only thing that matters at the end of the day. The only thing that matters is the salvation from God that He offers in His Son that provides peace and comfort and assurance and hope in the midst of a tumultuous world. And so if we can help you this morning in your passionate desire to serve the Lord, whether that's coming this morning and obeying the gospel and rising as a child of God and serving Him faithfully, or maybe you're here this morning and you feel like your walk with the Lord has gone down a different path and you need help getting back on the right path, if we can help you, let that be known as we stand.